It's All Things Considered on WNYC. I'm Amy Eddings. Specialists disinfected the Hamilton Heights apartment of Dr. Craig Spencer, the 33-year-old doctor who's currently in isolation in Bellevue Hospital getting treated for Ebola. Patrick Borges, one of two team members certified to enter the apartment, said no other apartments would have to be evacuated. Neighbors' reactions were mixed, as WNYC's Marella Ivorak reports.
Ricky Lawrence lives across the hall from Dr. Spencer and says he's not concerned about getting Ebola.
In order for you to be affected, you have to deal with his bodily fluids. I'm not that close to him, so we're not sharing those things, so I don't have anything to worry about from that.
Lawrence says he mopped the floor with bleach and wiped the elevator buttons last night, and then he went about his business as usual.
I've lived through polio, AIDS epidemics, you know, flus, blizzards, 9/11. This is just one more in a series of things where you just have to kind of get your information, get your facts straight, and then act accordingly.
But others are not taking the news in stride. Stan Malone says his aunt, uncle, and a few relatives who live in Dr. Spencer's building are in that group.
My family members left, packed up and left.
The specially trained crew that cleaned Dr. Spencer's apartment works for a private company contracted by the city. An official said they removed the bed linens, towels, toiletries, food, and garbage, and cleaned the surfaces. City health officials say they don't believe the apartment where Spencer lived is contaminated because the disease had not progressed very far, and that it was clean out of an abundance of caution. For WNYC, I'm Marella Ivorak.
Health officials say Dr. Spencer rode the A and L trains the night before he fell ill. They reiterated today that subway riders are not at risk for catching Ebola. The last public place Dr. Spencer was in was at the Gutter, a bowling alley in Williamsburg in Brooklyn. As WNYC's Stephen Nesson reports, residents are trying not to worry.
The night before Dr. Spencer fell ill, he rode the L train to Williamsburg and spent time at the Gutter, a vintage bowling alley and bar. 35-year-old Meta Christensen lives a few blocks away. She's been reading about Ebola and says despite how hard it is to catch, she's still a little worried.
It's totally terrifying and it's unfamiliar to us, so people don't know how to respond. And when things like this happen, I think it's pretty natural to panic, sort of.
On the L train Friday, some people were wearing surgical masks and covering their faces with scarves, even though the city says the chance of contracting Ebola on the train is close to nil. 31-year-old Attica Narumi says the subway is always full of sick people, so we can't be worried about every sneeze.
Especially in the wintertime. Everybody's a little sickly anyway, so no need for panic, I don't think.
Others, like 28-year-old Carolyn Stoner, say she doesn't think she's at risk, but it's always in the back of her mind.
I'm not very concerned that my mom definitely texted me last night and told me to be safe. She said not to touch any poles in the subway. I mean, I do tell my fiancé, though, that if it gets bad and it actually spreads in New York, that we're heading out to my parents' place in Connecticut and hiding out.
Officials from the MTA say they've beefed up their protocols for dealing with potentially infectious waste. For WNYC, I'm Stephen Nesson.
New York City's Department of Health has dispatched disease detectives to retrace Dr. Spencer's steps in the 2 days before he felt sick and developed a fever. Who are these detectives talking to, and how many people are we talking about? The city won't say. WNYC's Fred Mogul has been talking with some former detectives about what the job entails, and he has this report.
When epidemiologists try to figure out how a disease is spreading, they work in teams. There are clinicians taking medical histories and parsing symptoms. There are number crunchers looking at data. And there are street detectives who go looking for contacts who might be infected.
They're just really good at finding people.
Dennis Nash worked for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the City Health Department on HIV and West Nile virus outbreaks. He wasn't one of those shoe-leather detectives, but he often marveled at their ability to track down strangers who were barely acquainted with the sick people being interviewed.
The person can say, you know, he's a light-skinned guy that hangs out on this corner with a freckle, and these disease intervention specialists will go out and find them and let them know that they may have been exposed and that they need to be tested.
Nash now works at the City of New York School of Public Health with Dr. Lorna Thorpe, a tuberculosis specialist who also worked for the same federal and local agencies. Neither of them have any inside knowledge of the current investigation, but Thorpe says you can bet there's one strategy that trumps almost all others.
You need to prioritize.
In TB investigations, Thorpe began by focusing on household contacts, work contacts, and other close contacts, while also getting some information on other contacts who were less close. She and her colleagues would start a diagram with what they call the index patient in the middle and work their way out.
We would literally draw concentric circles and prioritize accordingly because you can't expend all your human resources chasing everybody.
There are many health department staffers who do this day in, day out for sexually transmitted diseases, tuberculosis, measles, and other contagious illnesses. They don't just swing into action when a headline-grabbing superbug emerges. Nash says health officials are probably borrowing people from the TB and STD units at the moment, but they're also probably deploying them cautiously.
To make sure that the other critical functions of the health department aren't undermined, they can't stop doing TB surveillance and TB contact tracing because there's an Ebola outbreak going on. So it's all about trying to manage the whole big picture, which is really hard.
That being said, this Ebola outbreak, at least in its current form, has some things going for it that make it easier than other outbreaks. First of all, Ebola is transmitted only by direct contact with bodily fluids. Nash says that's different than a lot of illnesses. Take the measles.
Literally, there have been examples of people that not even being in the same room as a measles case contracting the infection because it's so infectious and airborne. This is so worlds away from that.
Secondly, you know who the index case is. That can often be very difficult to figure out. And thirdly, Thorpe says, Craig Spencer is pretty much the ideal index patient, an emergency physician knowledgeable about the disease he's infected with, who's been closely monitoring his own health.
He came in early. The channel of communication between him, his employers, the health department, and the medical facility seemed to be very efficient. And by evening time, we had people in quarantine, and the public had a deep knowledge about where he has been.
City officials say their focus is Spencer and the three other close contacts, but it's not clear how many other people they're reaching out to, if only to gather phone numbers and emails. Thorpe says that would depend on available manpower, but typically it would be useful to know who are the people in the next concentric circle or two out from patient zero, just in case. For WNYC, I'm Fred Mogul.
We have answers to your Ebola questions on WNYC.org. This is WNYC.